Leo Brown, happy to be with you. Leo Brown, almost hour. Colts current 6 minutes of the afternoon. Looking at the interesting things that are happening in the news, and of course, looking at all of that from a authentically Catholic perspective, which is demanding. It's a tremendously demanding position to have to take, especially this day and age. And then, of course, there are those things that we were challenged by even within our ranks. I posted this over my Facebook page, the Pope basically saying Islam is not a religion of violence. It's unfair to categorize it as such. And then there are those Catholics who say, well, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. So it's unfortunate. Father Thomas Loya with us this afternoon. We'll be talking to him. I also want to talk about this revelation of the nude photographs. And by the way, this is on my Facebook page. I did say content warning. So if you dig into this, be prepared for what you're going to see. Something we got to ask forgiveness. We just got to say, here's such a chance to change. We'll talk about that in just a moment. It's not back.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, happy to be with you. I'm Leo Brown, almost hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, we do that for 50 minutes every afternoon. Tuesdays, we are joined by Father Thomas Loya of TaborLife.org. I'm assuming we have Father with us. Father, are you there? Hello. Nope, no Father Loya yet. Okay, so hopefully we'll get that connected and we'll figure out what's going on. We'll see if we can talk to him at some point. Certainly, TaborLife.org, a terrific resource. You can get there and take a look at all of the many things that Father Thomas Loya posts and presents from the really reasonable, beautiful understanding of theology of the body. And when you get this and you understand it, so many other things can make sense. It's just, it really is a very revealing perspective. And when you see that human sexuality is a key to understanding God, and you really, again, begin to understand this, not just intellectually, which is challenging enough. I think it's tough enough to do that intellectually. But then when you internalize this and begin to understand it intimately, whether you're married or single or religious, to understand that there is something about this dynamic, amazing, amazing things can happen. A lot of individuals up in arms, especially from the Catholic world, regarding this new commission that has been formed to investigate the potential for women deacons. And the fear is, well, if we're going to have female deacons, well, then that's just a step toward female priests. And then what do we do? And the theology of the body protects that. And I think that that's something we have to understand. And it looks like we may not have Father with us this afternoon, but nonetheless, this is something we should find some degree of comfort in, and that is the fact that in the role of deacon, it is not, the deacon never administers the sacrament of the Eucharist, right? Deacons can preside over certain other sacramental elements of you know, baptisms and marriages, where basically the conference of that sacrament is either between the couple or through the actual form and matter of baptism. It's a completely different dynamic to understand what takes place between the priest and the community as the priest is truly in persona Christi, and what is reflected and generated, created, put into motion, truly effectualized, whatever you want to say. All of these things that happen at the Mass are very specific to the priest. And not only specific to the priest, but specific to the male priesthood. Now, you may say, well, why does it matter? Well, because the priest is Jesus at that moment, standing in the place of Christ, conferring this opportunity of the Eucharistic reality to take place. The Eucharistic reality, which is the giving of the gift of self in such a potent reality that it plants the seed literally, not just symbolically, but literally the seed of life in us all through this Eucharistic reality. Now, it's not misogynistic, and it's not some sort of you're not good enough, women, to do this mentality. It's you're simply not equipped. You're simply not equipped. And it's not because you're less than or not as good as. It's just you're different. You don't have the maleness, which is what is the component here, into the fertilization, and the seed being planted into the fertile ground that will bring forth a new life from the church. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, I never really had a hard time with this one. I've had a hard time with other things to grasp, but it just seemed like when that was explained to me, and through the understanding of theology of the body, I got this realization. It was like, oh, okay, well, it was satisfactory. It just seemed so completely logical. There was never a question. Well, why? We really can't put a female in that position. We really can't. Because Jesus could have ordained women. He could have given them the opportunity to have done this, but it would have diminished the model in the sense that the life-giving seed of Jesus through the priest would be inverted in a way that would not work. It would just simply not work. We could not have that. And it's because we believe in the true, it's not just symbolic. It is truly taking place that Jesus is present in the priest, therefore conferred into the Eucharist. We can't diminish that. It can't be diminished. And the tougher part, and this is what I say all the time, you want to get into some tough stuff. You want to really wrestle with the difficulty of this. Wrestle with the difficulty of receiving that seed. Wrestle with the difficulty of the openness and full receptivity and offering of ourselves in that sacramentality that allows new life to come forth. Wrestle with that one, especially men. This is not natural to us. It's not our natural stance or state or position to assume receptivity in this fashion. So when you begin to really intimate that, personalize it, and accept it, that's tough. And I know there's a lot of like men type of ministries out there who just want to talk about masculinity and it's all about this toughness. And no, you know what it's about? It's about that receptivity. Can we get to that point? It's not about emasculation. It's not what I'm talking about. It's about getting to the point of being so bride-like in our masculinity, so receptive that there's an opportunity now for Christ to work in us, to begin that work of redemption, that work of transformation, that work of conversion. Those things can only happen when we're truly receptive. And if we got that model right, then I think we would see a big, big difference in the way we live our faith. We would have to. We would have to. And it's not about diminishing roles. It's not about rearranging or restructuring. It's about how do we do this right? How do we get it right? There is a right order. And I know that that's an unpopular thing to say, that there's something naturally ordered. We don't want to believe that. We want to think that we have all of this opportunity to manipulate and change and do things the way we want to do it and decide what we want to do and how we want to do it. And biology means nothing. There's a natural order. There's a natural order to the universe. There's a natural order to the earth. There's a natural order to the seasons. There's a natural order to life. All of this, you cannot deny. That's only when we insert our wills and our intellects and those become a challenge to the natural order that we start to have difficulty. So all of us are called to be the bride. And in this equation, as it is in Ephesians 5 and the controversial stuff that we hear there, in this equation, we're called to be submissive, to accept that gift graciously and allow that gift to transform us. And the model of Christ in the church, having this receptivity and acceptance and this opportunity for new life to grow, is no better illustrated than in what we see in our Blessed Mother. A total trust, a total abandonment, a total reliance on the grace that was going to come from this opportunity to say yes in the most powerful way, a way that changed all of salvation history. And what's interesting is we can participate in that. And we don't just participate as a time gone by sort of participation. Yeah, like, okay, we're going to kind of be like Mary here. No, we're going to do it. If we accept that gift of grace in that powerful way, and if we authentically work with our gifts, and this is something that Pope Francis said to the kids at World Youth Day, if we really are who we're called to be or who we're created to be, that's our call. Who are we created to be? That's ultimately what we're called to be. Not manipulating creation, not at war with creation, not trying to change things about who we are, but accepting who we are and allowing who we are to truly transform through the grace of God. Amazing things can happen. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this. Redbox Media now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Thank you for joining us. Follow me over on Facebook. Interesting things happening over there. Lots of conversation today. Wow. Stirred up the hornet's nest. Got things going. And I never know. Some of the things that I get excited about, and I think, oh my goodness, look at this, and I post it over there, and it's something that I'm intending to talk about here, just kind of sits there and nobody cares. And then other things just go bonkers. And I should have expected that this one would have, because it does have a undoubted sensational nature. But as I posted this, my intention was to draw attention to this in a way that we can say, wait a minute, there are things that we need to address. There are concerns that we have to have. And there are times where we simply have to say, really, is this one worth going at? Do we have to take this topic? And basically, it's this New York Post article from the nudes of Melania Trump in the 90s. And I don't know if this is to discredit the president. Of course, his campaign manager has said she's a beautiful woman. These were photos that were done artistically, and there's nothing pornographic about this. There's nothing to see here. Move along. And maybe some who would say, okay, this is a little bit too extreme, and being a family values type of individual, and the reason why I go conservative in my voting, this is not a path that I want to go down now. Now, I don't know. I mean, I think his political opponents were the ones who would bring this out to say, look at who you're dealing with. But I don't think we can pull anything out of the past. With some exceptions, I think recent history is okay to analyze when it comes to character of an individual. We've got to look at that and say, oh, wait a minute. But when we're dealing with something from 20, 25 years ago, we can probably assume that there's water under the bridge since then. So to suggest that these are valid points, that this is something that we even remotely need to hold against someone, my goodness, right? We all have sin. We all have issues. We all have pasts. We all have things that we certainly pray are forgiven. And we're all still going to do stupid stuff. We're still going to do stupid stuff. We're still going to fall. We're still going to make mistakes. And as it is this day and age, unfortunately, many of the things that we say and do are captured in some sort of videographic and or photographic evidence. And this is one of those from a long time ago that we need to simply say, really, really? Do we need to discredit? And that's the other question. Do we need to discredit Trump anymore? And I know it may be odd that I'm defending him on this one, but he's got enough stuff that we can look at and go, wait a minute. Really? Are we going down this road to make it even more of an issue? I don't get it. There's plenty as it is. The one that really interests me the most is the fact that 48% of Americans, this is over on my Facebook page as well, think that Russia is somehow involved in this election. Now, I'm all about stemming the Cold War. I'm all about saying, let's let bygones be bygones, kind of like what I'm talking about here with Melania Trump. Let's get this behind us. Let's not worry about it. But when we're talking about a issue of potential national security, and the fact that Donald Trump certainly made the comments that he made regarding the email scandal, hoping that Russia finds these, hoping that there's a Russian hacker who will get into these emails and release them. And then the chumminess that seems to be there between him and Vladimir Putin, this is weird. I think this is weird. And again, I want to heal all wounds. I really do. I want wounds to be healed. I don't want us to carry this around and continue to say, well, we had that whole Gorbachev thing. Okay, well, that was a long time ago. So yeah, so the Cold War through that time, we're still making it an issue. I don't think so. We need to get behind that. So this, but this is strange. I think at the very least, we've got to say there's something suspect about this, and that's the stuff I would rather dig into. But unfortunately, the sensationalization, I guess I should say, of nude photos of someone's wife from 30 years ago or 20 some odd, whatever it was, that gets a whole heck of a lot more interest. And it's unfortunate because I think we have real issues here. And there are things that we have to think about, consider, and question. That's a whole lot more important. And we're not doing that. I think we're, and I would say this is a distraction. It's an unfortunate distraction from what really should be the issues we need to look at that could detract us from a Trump vote. Because I think there's a whole lot more at play here than what we're seeing. And you got a guy who is now saying that he's convinced that this election's going to be rigged. He doesn't want to debate Hillary Clinton, using it as the excuse of it being a football game that's the issue. All of this just really doesn't make sense. Why would we not just stick to the issues, continue campaigning, continue gaining steam, trying to find that way of moving this forward, and not keep just moving the target, which kind of seems to be what's happening. Now there's the controversy to the point that Republicans are leaving, or at least abandoning their support of Donald Trump based on what he had to say regarding this Kazir Khan situation, the father of the fallen soldier who spoke at the DNC and really just kind of came out with this attitude of, oh yeah, well, that's nothing. You don't know the sacrifices I've made. And we can't do that. We can never do that. We can never say, oh yeah, you think your pain's bad? Well, check out my pain. That individuals suffer in different ways, and certainly the loss of a child is not comparative to you working your butt off. Yeah, if you've worked hard and you've earned something, you probably made sacrifices. You probably have. And there has been suffering, and there have been things that you've had to deal with that just was not what you wanted to deal with, but you've dealt with it because you were on your path to success. I get that. But that's not the same. And to act like there's some comparison there is disturbing. That's really disturbing to me. And fortunately, there has been enough response that there have been those who have taken note of that. But now we're distracted because Melania Trump has nude photos and we're not looking at the issues of what the heck is going on with Russia. Why did Trump basically endorse this Crimea annexation? Why does he say it's a good idea? And even though it sparked a war with Ukraine and the challenges that were happening at the point of this taking place, he's behind it. What does that say? What does that mean? Why are we not examining these issues more deeply to try to really get to the point of some real ethics here? Because we don't, as I've said this before, we don't know enough. We know Clinton. We can look at her record and we can legitimately critique and say, well, there's real problems here. Certainly for a Catholic, this does not add up and it does not fit our ethic. And we got to understand that. We don't really have a lot of that. Well, we don't have any of that, really, from Donald Trump. We don't have a political record to look at. We have a business record, but we can't really examine this from a standpoint of go, wait a minute, does this really add up? Is this a foreign policy type of position that makes sense with what we're trying to achieve as a nation? Maybe it does. Maybe I'm the one who doesn't understand. But I think we have to really take a closer look at what is being said. It's kind of what I always say. It's like there's context and there's subtext. Are we looking subtextually at what is being said? Because if we're not, we're missing something. And it for Trump, it generally is just all contextual. There's not a whole lot of, you know, he does kind of say what he means and shoots him the hip, and you can kind of say, we kind of get the context. But maybe there's more in the subtext here that really needs to be examined. And I think that we're probably doing ourselves a disservice if we don't dig deeper into that and go, goodness, what is this? Right? Is it because he just wants to get his vodka made in Russia and he's willing to do whatever it takes to make TNT's the drink of the town, which apparently was his failed attempt at getting Trump vodka and tonic as the drink everybody wanted to drink, apparently. So it's, I think there's a lot going on. I think that there's maybe so much going, maybe it's moving so fast now that we're just not able to keep up, or we're really not able to pay attention. I don't know, but I think we should. I think it's time. And I certainly think it's those, especially those who are diehard conservative voters who will say, hey, anything but Hillary, therefore Trump's my guy. Well, let's look a little bit closer here, because what are these issues and what are we supporting and what exactly does this look like? While at the same time, forgiving anything from the ancient past, right? More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Thank you for listening to BreadBox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. BreadBox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Culture, Current Events Hour, Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. I just had this posted over my Facebook page from a friend, and I actually had this sent to me earlier from a different friend, so it's interesting that twice in one day this shows up, and it's Shannon Dingle, I think is how you pronounce her name, blogger, I'm pro-life and voting for Hillary, here's why. And I happen to have read this earlier, so familiar with the point she makes, and I think in this, it's a tough political climate, and we got to realize that it's not just either or. Please don't do that. I get where she's coming from. Believe me, I get where she's coming from. I can only assume that at least a portion of her children, of her six children, are adopted. Three African American, one Asian, and two, I'm guessing, either biological or Caucasian, as she and her husband are kids. And believe me, I know that biracial families, there's a dynamic there that kind of changes the perspective. I know this intimately because I have two biracial children. So I get it. I understand. There's a way we see things that generally we look at what is best for, or we hope what is best for our children. And yeah, I mean, that's not the only reason why I have challenges with Donald Trump. I do believe he has issues against Mexicans. I believe he has issues against people of other, I think there's a xenophobic situation there that seems to be apparent. But there's a lot of other things that bother me. It's not just that. I'm not bothered to the point of saying, and this is why. Now, I have defended, I think you know this, I have said positive things about Hillary Clinton in what character has been revealed and in seeing her stick to her marriage. I think that that's one thing that we could evaluate. I think that, sure, the Democrats, and this is why the vast majority, quite honestly, for many years of Catholics were registered Democrats, because this was the party of the little guy. This was the party of the working class. This was the party who would find ways to assist those in need. And we were certainly for a long, long time the minority. And that was a reason why we saw that the Democrats kind of had our back. But the abortion issue has become such a wedge, and especially when you have a president essentially saying, as she has said, and not that she's president, but as she has said, and our current president and Bill Clinton said this as well, that the woman's right to choose must be protected because of its constitutionality. Well, you know, we've had constitutionality on other things that changed. And the same question you would hope to ask is, well, then what about the Second Amendment? What about gun control? That's a constitutionally protected issue. Are we going to address that in any way, shape, or form? Because that's where we stand on this. If you're going to take the position of saying, well, it's a constitutional protection, well, you don't believe in the Constitution if you're willing to change parts of it and not other parts of it. So it's a very disingenuous position to take. So that in and of itself, I get where she is coming from. I've read this. And yes, if you were to put a balanced scale with the issues that reveal what is more pro-life than less pro-life, and abortion is just one of those that has equal weight to anything else that you put on that scale, then you would probably find the scales tipping heavily toward Hillary Clinton. And that's what this blog piece essentially suggests, that if all things were equal, we put them on the scale, Hillary's outshining Donald Trump on life issues, generally speaking, being more human life focused, and how do we address the issues of humanity? Absolutely. I agree. I would agree with that. But I cannot stand behind anyone who simply says, we have constitutional protection for abortion, and therefore it cannot be changed. Cannot be changed, and a woman's right to choose must be upheld, because that's, at the very least, and I say, let's find a way to eradicate it all, not necessarily legislatively, but let's find a way to change hearts so people don't make those kind of statements. Let's find a way to say, wait a minute, and if you're willing to say that and allow this practice to take place throughout all 9 months, which apparently Hillary Clinton has voted down any sort of restriction on partial birth abortion, she has that voting record in the Senate, we have to realize that she's an all or nothing individual on this. And therefore the weight of that unfortunately outweighs all the other stuff. I'm sorry. It just does. We cannot come down to say, well, the scales tip heavily over here and there's all this other stuff. And not that we should ever be a single issue voter. I'm not saying that. I think we have to look at all of the issues and really examine. I mean, this is one of the things I have a problem with Trump about, because people are like, well, at least he's pro-life. Really? There's no evidence of that. Because he said it, that's your evidence? He said a lot of stuff that has not necessarily been the most accurate when examined. So I think we've got to be careful with this. And I think the biggest thing is, get out of the two-party mindset. Just get out of it. Just forget about it. Find a suitable third party. I'm not saying vote for my girl, who I've decided is the candidate for me. I've examined where she stands on issues. I've interviewed her. I've discussed this. I think, you know, we've had Facebook conversations for me to kind of get a better handle on her policy issues. Do I think she has a chance of winning? No. Do I know that I can vote for her with a clear conscience? Yes. Yes. I know that. And I don't have to think I'm wedging my vote against somebody else, or, well, at least it's anybody but them. No, it's me voting for someone who's values I truly appreciate, who seems to extol a degree of character and actually has a heart for doing this well, and it's not just the political machinery. Right? There's this meme that I posted a couple of days, Trump and Hillary, Donald Trump, everything that's wrong with the culture, Hillary, everything that's wrong with the government. And unfortunately, there's a huge degree of truth to that. And I don't want to contribute to that anymore. I just want to get away from it. I want to get out of that machinery and simply say, you know what? There are more options. There are plenty of options. And I know that Gary Johnson has kind of seemed to fall into that place of options when it comes to third party. I would invite you to take a look at the infographic that I posted on my Facebook page and see that this is an issue that we have to understand that it's not. And I'm sorry, I got distracted. I thought I was on my page, and it turns out that I'm on someone else's page when I'm looking at this. The infographic has the three of them, Trump, Hillary, and Johnson, and you kind of see where they stand on issues. And there's probably more congruity on Johnson with Clinton than even with Trump. And you got to understand where libertarianism is. If you really grasp it, it's not anything other than a big anything goes. It really kind of is that. There's such a decentralization, there's such a reduction of government, anything, that it's all about individual personal liberty, and you can't oppose in that party platform anything that you find to be problematic as a values voter. You simply can't do that. So I would invite you to look at that and then to really think about, could we this time vote for a third party? Could we possibly say, I'm going to keep my conscience clear. I'm not going to contribute to either side of this machinery. I'm not going to be a cog in this thing. And I am simply going to step outside of the norm and look at this a little more realistically, at least from my personal values. Now, I know there are those who will say, but you're throwing your vote away. And it depends on whose side of the fence I'm talking to at the time, who will tell me I'm throwing my vote to the other side, right? So, one of the two will win, but I'm not going to contribute to it. I'm just not going to contribute to it. I'm also not going to vote. I am not going to sit it out and simply say, well, I don't have anybody to vote for. That's not true. There are options that I can feel good about. I can embrace this opportunity, do my civic duty, and at the same time, not have to immediately rush out to the confessional because I feel slimy or dirty or my stomach's turning or I've held my nose, as I've heard people say. Well, sometimes you just got to hold your nose and vote. No, you don't. No, you don't. No. And don't fall back on the USCCB saying, well, in a case where there's two candidates and you kind of have to look at a degree of values between these two and maybe make a decision. No, there's more than two. There's more than two. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.